Good evening, everybody. I'm very glad to have you here for this final seminar of philosophy and management this year on leadership and wisdom. We have the pleasure to have with us Mike Thompson. I will introduce him later on. It's really a great privilege. I will try to start with a short synthesis of this year. So hopefully for those who were here with us for the whole cycle, the whole program, it will be kind of a refresher. And for those who were not, hopefully it will give them an idea of what we discussed and what we learned. But of course, it's a personal synthesis. So probably some of you will have heard different things, learned different things, and it's also the purpose of this evening to share all this with Mike, who is really a specialist in wise leadership. He has done recently a very large survey among CEOs across the world on wise leadership. And he has recently written a book on wise management in organizational complexity. For those who might be interested in buying the book, we can get them at a great discount through Mike. Okay. So that's, but there is no book available tonight. There is, by the way, another book for which Mike also contributed, and Luc Boucart was the coordinator, Leading with Wisdom. Luc is the founder and the director of SPES, which is spirituality in economics and summer living. And it's a great organization, more busy in the Flemish part of the country, but also at the European level, and really dealing with similar issues as philosophy and management. And it was my great privilege to have Luc as my philosophy professor at the KUL, where I studied, and I'm very, very honored that he's with us tonight. He has been, throughout my short life so far, a great inspiration.
14 euros.
Yes, and I forgot to mention it's 10 euro, okay? For those who already took one without paying. And last but not least, you will also find there some leaflets on SAPES, the China Europe Business School to which Mike belong in Shanghai. There is some information about what they do, and you will find also some information about the new Executive Master on Management and Philosophy that we run together with Solvay Brussels School, UCL, La LSM, and HEC Liège. And the Executive Master will start in November this year. There are leaflets there. Now, having said all this, I would like, in fact, to start with a very short video that was shared with us by Surya Taora, one of the speakers. And the video is in Hindi, but don't worry, you don't need to understand Hindi in order to understand the video. It's a beautiful video about leadership, and even I would say about wise leadership. And basically, I will try to comment what we learned this year through the video. So, Brigitte, if you can launch the video, it's called The Tree.
Isn't this beautiful?
Well, I mean, it seems simple, and maybe some of you will see just the idea that, okay, to lead is to bring people together in order to accomplish something. But at least looking at it and looking at it again, I realized that really there is so much in this video that echoes what we learned through the various seminars this year. And I would like just to pinpoint through screenshots of this this short video some of the qualities or virtues that we discussed and that link to leadership and wise leadership. The first one is discernment. the capacity to look at reality with objectivity and to see what is really going on. We talked about sagacity, objectivity with some of the speakers, about insight, how to get insight, about deep intuition in order also to see what is real. And also to be less driven by our ego, which blocks us, which makes kind of a screen between us and reality. And this little boy getting up and looking at what's going on echoes a very great thinker about leadership, who is Ronald Heifetz from Harvard Business School. And he says, basically, one of the first tasks of leaders is to get on the balcony, to get on the balcony to see what is really going on. So discernment is really one of the first virtue or quality that we may associate with leadership. The second one is courage. And this is the courage of this boy with obviously not enough strength to push this tree, but who does it nonetheless. It's associated with responsibility, with commitment, with the idea of promise, to speak with promise, as Mark Strom told us, to give hope to people. And although this little boy does not speak, what he does will speak to all the people around him. It's also what Cynthia Fleury mentioned as the imaginatio vera, to think about the future in positive terms in order to make it happen. And it's also related to the notion of justice we discussed with Fabrice Midal, because to be just is also requires courage. I like very much what Strom said about this. To lead wisely is to dare to speak into darkness on behalf of others. To speak even when you as a leader, you feel uncertainty and fear because of your responsibility. And to dare to speak into darkness, it's like this little boy, to do things even though by yourself you cannot achieve anything. And you are not certain it will happen. The third important virtue we discussed with many of the speakers is conversation, dialogue, to induce a dialogue among the group, the people of the group. And this dialogue, this conversation can give meaning to the group, to each member of the group. Cynthia Fleury talked also about paresia, and paresia for Foucault, echoing the Greek, is to say the truth, what is really true. It's not an absolute truth, but really what is going on. And again, I like what Mark Strom said. One of the main tasks of the leader is to renew the key missing conversation within the group. There is always a conversation within one group, an important one. Often it is not explicit. Well, the task of the leader is to make it explicit, to dare to allow people to talk about what is really important for them. And to do so will help the people to move forward. The last of the big virtue or quality that we discussed, especially with Pascal Molinier, is care. To care for the others. To be sensitive to what they are going through. Be generous, as Fabrice Midal also told us. And to be elegant. There is some elegance in being caring for the other. And again, on this, Heifetz says that one of the tasks of the leader is to modulate the stress of the group. When there is a problem, the stress level rises for all members of the group. The leader must be there to lower that stress to a productive level, which is not to stop the stress. You probably you cannot, but not to make it as low that people think the problem is resolved while it is not. So to modulate the stress is to find the right level of stress which will help people not to panic, not to be demoralized, not to make as if there would be no problem, but to be ready to address the real issue. And I think that when you look at those different virtues, you might wonder, well, what is the most important, or in which order should we start? I think it doesn't matter. What is probably clear, and what we have felt through those discussions on the virtues of a leader, is that each virtue in itself is a door which opens to all other virtues. Think about it, for example, you cannot be courageous, truly courageous, without being just, honest, and caring, without being realistic about the chances of success, but at the same time hopeful or giving hope. If you are not just when you want to be courageous, if you are not honest when you are want to be courageous, then you become something else than just courageous. So each virtue in itself is a possible path to all virtue. And this is exactly what Yankelevich said. Vladimir Yankelevich, a very great French philosopher of the last century, wrote a great book about this, which is called Les Traités de Vertu, a treatise on virtue. Now, the virtues I mentioned so far are kind of virtues related to action. But behind this, there is probably even more important virtues related on how you are, how to be. And there are two great virtues we addressed. But before that, I would like to link those four virtues to the art of the wise leader that Mark Strom discussed with us. Basically, Mark, to put it very short, links those different virtues, although he named them sometimes differently, to four arts that a leader can practice. The first is the one of story. You cannot motivate people, you cannot lead people with numbers, with KPIs. Although some people would want us to think so. You can only really motivate them or help them to be motivated, because I guess you never motivate somebody else. They motivate themselves. All you can do is to help them to motivate themselves. And that you can do through stories. Not stories, you know, fancy, no, stories that really touch what they are doing, what they might be willing to do. That's the art of story. The second one is the art of grace. And the art of grace is the one by which you treat every person with respect, with grace, disregarding their rank or status. A wise leader does not discriminate people in function of their so-called hierarchical importance. All should be treated with respect and dignity, and with care. The third one, the third art of the wise leader, is brilliance. To draw brilliance out of every member of the group. To make them shine. The leader is not there to shine for himself or for herself, but to let other people shine. And lastly, the art of promise, the art to speak truly, strongly, with words that give hope to people. Not misleading them, not making them believe things that are not true, but words that can give them the hope that they can achieve something or do something together. Now, as I said, behind this, or in order to be such a leader, we discussed at least two virtues that are fundamental. The first one is humility. And I like in the video the idea that although this little boy was really the one who made it happen, at the end nobody almost sees them. People pass by and there is just this little lady that gives him a clap in the back, and he's happy, perfectly happy with that. He does not wait, or he does not expect that other people would cheer for him, or, you know, put him on a high level. No, he's just happy for what happened. That is the humility that we discussed, the simplicity of the wise leader. It's frugality. He does not want big bonuses. He's just happy to help the group grow. And even we went as far as to talk about obedience with Sébastien Horry. The leader is also the one who accepts to obey to others, depending on the context, to obey some rules. And this is not new. Lao Tzu, 630 years before Christ, said already, the best leader is not the one with strong, with a big voice, who is able to have people follow him. Not the one even people love to follow. No, the best leader is the one whose existence the group barely knows, who can help the group grow, but without trying to shine for himself or for herself. The second great virtue is the calm, serenity, interior peace. And we discussed it with many, with Jacques Casterman, with Soria, also with Emmanuel Tonuti, when he told us that one of the first tasks of the leader is to be able to be with himself alone, to retreat himself in order to become the leader of himself before he becomes the leader of others. And you can see also that little boy having those few seconds of deep solitude in front of the task that he wants to accomplish. In that sense, I think that Jacques Casterman shared with us something very important. He said, we are not suffering from lacking of something. We are suffering from ignoring what is not lacking. Inner peace. Because deep down inside, if we can listen to our essential self, as Jacques Casterman was saying, we are already at peace. Every one of us is at peace. The only problem, let's say, is that our ego and the fears that go with it make us believe we are not at peace. But if we realize that, then we can really become peaceful. So, with this, we can reflect a little bit on what is wisdom. And I would like to share with you some of the learnings I gathered through the years on this idea of what is wisdom. And I take this mainly from Marcel Conche, one of my favorite philosophers, but also from André Comte-Sponville. And in one of his books, which is called Le capitalisme n'est pas moral, le capitalisme est-il moral? Capitalism, is it ethical? He makes a classification of the orders of decision that we may face. And he says, basically, at the bottom, there is the economic, technical, or scientific order. That's the realm of the possible or the impossible, technically, economically speaking. Can we clone a sheep, a human being, or not, technically? This world, this order, is driven by the natural and rational laws. The question is, should we do everything which is technically possible? Probably not. Some people will say yes, but a lot of us will say no. And that's why we create another order, the juridical and political order, which limits what is technically, naturally feasible. Now, is that enough? Should we do or follow any law which we have passed in a particular society? Well, a lot of people will say no. We cannot agree with all the laws. Think about some racist laws which have been passed in some countries recently or in the past. Should we follow them just because they are law? No. And that's why we have a moral order, where we go beyond what is just feasible technically, or which is what is legal, and where we discriminate as a group what is right and what is wrong. So the question is this enough? Does it stop there? Now what André Comte-Sponville says, no. Because here, you just follow some rules that you have agreed within a group, but to which you might not necessarily respond deep down. And that's why he says the ethical order is above the moral, the legal, or the technical order. Not so much as it limits, no, it can be limited by the moral order, but it completes it. And it completes it, the ethical order completes the moral order by giving it a different dimension, which is love. To give you a very simple example, think about the red light. Maybe you will stop at the red light because you don't want to be punished by the cops for breaking the law and not respecting a simple rule. That's there you respond to the moral order. You follow the rules that have been agreed within society. But you can do exactly the same thing because you think, I want to respect the life of others. And by respecting this rule, that's exactly what I do. So you do the same thing, but you don't just do it to comply with the rules of society. You do it out of love. And that's what he called the ethical order. Now, the question is this enough? And this is not addressed within the book of Sponville, but Marcel Conch does it. And he says, beyond this, there are spiritualities which color the way we look at the world. Okay? And there are many of them. And nobody is to judge which one is better. But what he says is that a wisdom, a particular wisdom, is when a particular vision of the world, a particular spirituality, is in coherence with your way of being, of acting, with your way of acting in the ethical order. So wisdom, one wisdom among others, and there can be many of them, is exactly when somebody acts and behaves out of his free will, out of love, in coherence with his greater vision of life. And I think what is so interesting about this to me is that it links clearly wisdom not just to big and nice ideas, but also with acts in everyday life. Now, what is also the interesting about all this is what Sponville says about the way we view leaders in acting upon those different orders. And it discriminates between the descending hierarchy for groups and the ascending hierarchy for individuals. What does he mean? He means this, that for the group, what is the most important is, first of all, to make sure that we survive, and so to respect our basic needs, to be fed, to have shelter, and so on. The rest comes afterwards, but is of less crucial importance. On the other hand, for individual, what is most important for us as individual when we say about somebody that he is a friend or that we love him. Most of the time is because we appreciate what they do at the highest level of those orders. And what Sponville says, I think rightly, is that a great leader is one who can live with this tension, with the inherent tension between those two. For example, if a CEO would tell you now, I take all my decisions out of love, you might not be sure that you want to follow or invest in his company, even if you think he's a great guy. And even if you think you would like to spend your holidays or lunch with him, right? So you need to balance the two. And here again, you find discernment, courage, care, and the other virtues we've discussed so far. But of course, and as Mark Strom told us, it's you can never define precisely what great concepts like wisdom and leadership are. So there are many ways to look at what it is. And I would like to also look at another one, which we discussed at length with some of the speakers, that wisdom is basically to know that all is one, that everything is connected. We discussed that with Surya Taora, we discussed it with definitely with Jacques Casterman and with so many others. Now, at one level, it's very easy to understand. Everything is connected. Whatever I do has impact, and we can see it to all people at a very close range. But what some spiritualities help us to understand is that it goes beyond what we can see. That it, when we do something, that right now what we do, every move that we make, affects everything. And that when we look, although we are all different and diverse and we have our individualities and our egos, etc., deep down, we are molecules, energy. We don't even know exactly what we are at the bottom. But what we can suspect, and what some spiritualities have done for thousands of years, is that deep down, we are just one. There is no difference between you and me, between all of you, and between you and the chairs on which you sit. Basically, it's whole energy. And we do not pretend to have to demonstrate it physically, technically. But we can feel, at least some spiritualities pretend that, that this is the ultimate reality. And for some, wisdom is precisely to realize this. Because when you know this, when you know this not just rationally, but deep down within you, then you find that inner peace we were talking about. And you become humble because there is no fundamental distinction. Whatever you do, whatever great achievements you have done, deep down, it's all one. So I think this helps to understand why wisdom and wise leadership may be. And for this, it's important to stress that there are many paths to the top of the mountain. Because when you think about it, most spiritualities, at least those who have resisted the test of time, say basically the same thing. And we had the great privilege with Surya Taora and some of you to go and see a rabbi. And of course, a rabbi, we would say, is a monotheist, so he has a fundamentally different approach, because he would say there is one God. What was extraordinary is that this rabbi told us this is not true. In the Bible, it is not said that there is one God. If you read it correctly, it says God is one. God is one, all is one, it's exactly the same. So For me, it was really a revelation that even monotheist religion, in fact, correctly interpreted, at least according to this rabbi, are very close to what Surya Taora was saying with Vedanta. And this is beautiful, because it echoes also what Jankelevich was saying about the virtues. Each of them is a door to all other virtues, just as any spirituality, any wisdom or religion might be a door to the same view from the mountains. And what is great also is that it doesn't mean you need to make a syncretism, to mix all those religions to come to something which might be better. No, by following one path with integrity, you might come to the same point and meet those who have chosen another path. Now, this idea that everything is connected and that everything is one, is one that I have carried with me since I was a very little boy, and it was given to me by my judo teacher. And I found it again with Jacques Casterman when he told us about the practice of a martial art or the practice of Zen meditation. Basically, there are all different paths to the same objective, which is to master movements in such a way that in the end, it is not you anymore who is doing the movement, but something that we cannot call it. And so this image is the one of Master Anzawa, a great archery master. And he was almost blind, and he almost never missed his target. And people said, but how do you do? And he says, I'm not doing anything. It shoots. Because I am one with the bow, with the arrow, with the target, and everything else. I mean, in that sense, he had come to such a mastery of the art he was practicing, that his art was not shaken by his ego, but was free from it, from his fears, from his desires, from whatever, to let emerge what was already there. The arrow was already in the target. At least that's the way he saw it. And I think, if you remember the discussions we had with Jacques Casterman, that's exactly what he told us. And it's exactly the same idea of finding the peace which is already in us. So basically, Jacques was saying, you know, what we are looking for with so much desire is already there, if we can learn to see it, to appreciate it. Now, when we look at management, I think it's the same thing, and that was what Mark Strom was telling us. See, this little boy who was the leader is now a follower. And that's what Mark was saying. To lead wisely is to pay attention to the very ordinary yet difficult human phenomenon of how a person comes to the fore in one context and gets behind someone else in another. We tend to think that leaders are always leaders. They're not. Some leaders in one situation can be very bad leaders in others. A good leader is the one who knows when he has to step forward and when he has to retreat. Now, coming back on the issue that this group was facing with the tree blocking the road, leadership for Heifetz is to mobilize the group for the adaptive world. Now, the tree, in fact, is not the problem for this group. What is the real problem? It's their incapacity at some point to see that If they would unite, they could do it. That's the real problem. And so for Heifetz, the capacity of the leader is to mobilize the group to do the adaptive work, that is, to switch, to make a switch in their head of what's going on, and to see really what's going on. And that's what this little boy succeeds in doing, without one word. Precisely by showing that he's not able to do it by himself, and through this invite all the others. And there is a beautiful moment in which you see people making that realization. And there is this guy who let his helmet drop on the ground. It's exactly echoing the switch in his head, or in her head, whatever. What Heifetz is saying is that adaptive work is basically to diminish the gap between the values people stand for and the reality they face. Basically, any work of leadership is a work on values of the group, and how those values are in sync with the reality they face or they should face. If we understand this way, then we understand that this switch in the head of the people that the leader may help to achieve is not, it's not what he says that makes people act, it's the switch in their head. So the adaptive work enables action. And having said that, maybe we can ask the question, what is wise leadership? If we link this idea of leadership with the one of wisdom as knowing that all is one, then wise leadership might be to mobilize the group to become conscious that all is one. And that's a question. That's what I feel right now, but I will love to hear Mike telling us about this and how he sees it. That's what I wanted to share with you. And this, in fact, leads us to the next cycle of seminar. Because I think that if there is one thing we need to be conscious about in this society today, with the crisis that we are going through, is that we are currently following implicitly or explicitly, for the most of us, for the most managers, this idea that to be a manager is to be responsible to maximize the value without limits for shareholders under the constraint of the respect of the law. This seems to be a natural idea for most managers today, but it's an ideology. And I think that some leaders help us today to see that things can be different. And you have some people like Emmanuel Faber from Danone, who put Friedman, who said this, on his head by saying, no, the real task of the manager is to optimize the values for the society at large under the constraint of an adequate profit for shareholders. Basically, the objective here becomes the constraint, and the constraint becomes the objective. And what is behind this vision, to me, is very close to what we just said about wisdom, to know that everything is one. Because basically what is behind this, even if it's not explicit, is that we need to take into account all the stakeholders and not just privilege one. So next year, basically we will focus on that issue, how to move from shareholder value to shared value. Shared value that Michael Porter is talking about. And to us, to Roland and myself, it's really a continuity from what we learned this year on wise leadership. Hopefully, what we learned this year will help us to discuss those issues at a deeper level. And with this, I would like to end, mainly by thanking all of you for having participated to those seminars this year, and obviously all the speakers we had, Mark Strom, Sébastien Henry, Fabrice Midal, Jacques Casterman, Cynthia Fleury, Pascal Molinier, Emmanuel Tonuti, Surya Taora, and last but not least, Mike Thompson. And I would like to welcome you.